to the translation to this verse is, the Lord is the vanquisher of the distresses of one who is surrendered unto him. Thus, he who desired to destroy his family told me previously to go to Bhadrika Ashram. The purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. While at Dwarka, Uddhava was warned to avoid the distresses which were to follow the disappearance of the Lord and the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. He was advised to proceed to Bhadrika Ashram because there he could associate with the devotees of Naranarayan, and in their association of devotional service, he could increase his eagerness for chanting, hearing, knowledge, and detachment. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasme Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radhakanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Trubhischa Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavnebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I'll read the verse again. The Lord is the vanquisher of the distresses of one who is surrendered unto him. Thus he who desired to destroy his family told me previously to go to Bhadrika Ashram. So this is chapter 4 of Srimad Bhagavatam. And just a couple of verses before, two dynasties are coming together, the Vrishni dynasties and the Bhoja dynasties. And what they were doing together was they had prasadam, and then they decided to get intoxicated. And then when you get intoxicated, what tends to happen? You lose consciousness, and you can pick a fight very easily. So Krishna could already foresee that, you know, there is this big fight brewing, and there's going to be destruction of these dynasties. Now, the Vrishni dynasty is actually the Yadu dynasty. So the Kshatriyas in the Yadu dynasty are called the Vrishnis. And Krishna is actually part of the Vrishni dynasty. Another name of Krishna is Varshneya, which means he's born within the Vrishni dynasty. Also, there's the Bhoja dynasty. Now, the Bhoja dynasty literally means the dynasty that is involving themselves in sense gratification. The word Bhoja means to fight. Now, guess who do you think came from the Bhoja dynasty? Kamsa, yeah? So if your dynasty is known for picking fights, you can already see that once intoxicated and the direction of travel, there is going to be destruction. So Krishna could foresee this, and thus he advised Uddhava, who is also part of the Vrishni dynasty, to proceed to Bhadrika Ashram, where he could get association of devotees. And that association would then increase his chanting, his eagerness, his knowledge and detachment. So Bhadrika Ashram is actually a place in the Himalayas. And this is the abode of where Naranarayan Rishi used to reside. Naranarayan are an incarnation of Krishna. Another name for Bhadrika Ashram is Badrinath. So you may have heard of this word, Badrinath. In the Himalayas, there are a few holy places, Gangotri, Yamunotri, Badrinath, and Kedarnath, all high within the Himalayas, very high altitude, low oxygen, so it's not for the faint-hearted, taking a pilgrimage there. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in 1932, did a yatra there with devotees. And even in recent times, we've seen many gurus within ISKCON that have done yatras to Badrinath, Kedarnath, Gangotri, Yamunotri. So a beautiful holy place. Krishna actually didn't go there personally himself, but he wanted Uddhava to go there. as you know, he wanted to send someone there because he wanted Uddhava to reciprocate on his behalf. A very interesting pastime actually takes place in Bhadrika Ashram. When the Pandavas were in exile, they were roaming in different parts of the universe, and one part that they came to was Bhadrika Ashram. So the Pandavas there in Bhadrika Ashram, very high in the Himalayas, very scenic. You know, people love to go to scenic places, the Drakensberg Mountains in South Africa, Mont Blanc in France, the Swiss Alps, Mount Fuji, and the, you know, the views and the scenery is quite delightful. So Draupadi was sitting there on the edge admiring the view of the Himalayas. And, you know, as you go higher, the wind starts to blow even harder and faster. And while she sat there, this wind blew past, and these aroma of these celestial fragrances started covering up the air, and she was covered in these beautiful petals of flowers. And she was absolutely amazed that, you know, what is this flower that is giving out such a beautiful fragrance? It can't be from this world, and what are these flowers? So, like a chaste wife does, she turned to her husband, Bhim, and said, Bhim, I really like these flowers. Can you go find where they're coming from and pluck a few flowers? And Bhim, being the Kshatriya that he is, got very happy that he's got an opportunity to serve his wife. So he said, sure, I will go and find these flowers for yourself. So he started to trek the Himalayas, following the smell of the fragrance, following the petals to see where they're coming from. And he's going and going, and he's going actually higher and higher, deeper into the Himalayas. It's very peaceful, very serene. And then after a short while, he starts to hear a loud thumping sound. Tuff, tuff. And he's wondering, in such a peaceful place, who is making such a sound? So as he proceeded further, the sound got louder and louder. And lo and behold, in front of him was an old monkey lying across the path, wagging his tail and hitting the slab that he's on. And that was making a tumultuous sound. All these birds were flying around. All the animals were getting agitated because it was so loud. So Bhim went up to the old monkey and introduced himself. You always introduce yourself so that the person knows who you're talking to, you know. So he goes, I'm Bhimsen, one of the Pandavas, and we are residing here in Bhadrika Ashram. You know, who are you, dear monkey, and why are you making such a noise? You know, the monkey said, this path leads to the higher planets and is not for mere mortals. So please turn around and go back. Now when you say that to a Kshatriya, you know, starts to get enraged that, you know, you've called me a mere mortal. You don't think I have the capability to go forward. So he did not answer the question who he was. He just told Bhim to go back. Bhim turns around and says, no, I am going to proceed forward. Introduce yourself. And he refused. He said, I'm not going to move. You can either jump over me or move my tail and cross over. Now, Bhim knew that the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides in everyone's heart. And if he was to jump over him, it would be offensive to Krishna. And also, this monkey was elderly. So he did not want to offend the monkey by jumping across. Valuable lesson here. So he said, I cannot jump over you because you have the super soul residing in your heart. If you were an object, I would have simply jumped over you like my brother Hanuman did when he crossed over the ocean and went to Lanka, you know. Hanuman and Bhima are brothers because they come from the same father, Vayu, the wind god. So the monkey goes, who is this Hanuman you're referring to? Bhima gets even more angry. He says, you're a monkey and you don't know Hanuman? What type of monkey are you? You know, gets really enraged. He says, tell me a little bit about Hanuman. Who is he, you know, and what has he done? So he starts to narrate the pastime of Ramayana, how Sita Devi was kidnapped, how all these monkeys came together, headed by Hanuman, to go and find Sita Devi, how Hanuman jumped the ocean, fought with the demons, burned down Lanka, came back, and all of these, this glorious story. So the monkey was very pleased. He said, oh, this is very nice, you know. Hanuman sounds like a great personality. He said, but I'm still not moving, you know. So Bhim has the strength of 10,000 elephants. That's a lot of strength. So he said, sure, if you don't move, I will move you. So he starts to grab the tail, which looks, you know, he said, it's like a twig. I can pick it up and throw it to the side. Starts to grab the tail, but he can't even move it. And he puts all his might, starts to perspire, goes red. Still, nothing happens. Bhim, being a spiritual person, very quickly realizes that this is no ordinary being, right? So immediately offers dandavats to say, I'm very, very sorry. I took you as a mere mortal, but you're clearly someone from the spiritual planets. So please forgive me, firstly, and please introduce yourself. Hanuman started to laugh. Well, this monkey started to laugh and then introduced himself, and he said, I'm actually your brother, Hanuman. And they hugged, and, you know, these tears of ecstasy flew incessantly because Bhima had actually never met Hanuman. He'd only heard stories of Hanuman. So imagine, you hear about, you have a brother, he's this, you know, he's got so much valor, he did this for Ram. So he was full of pride for Hanuman. So imagine when he eventually met him. So they hugged, Hanuman moved out of his way, but he also gave him the boon that when you're on the battlefield, I will come on the flag of Arjuna's chariot, and I will scream loudly, and that roar that I give will help you defeat all your enemies. So we see that on the battlefield, during the battle of Mahabharata, Hanuman's flag was on Arjuna's chariot. And Bhimsen actually killed 100 Kauravas during the battle. So he gave him that benediction. Hanuman still resides in the Himalayas and here on our beloved altar here in Bhaktivedanta Manor. He still has some service outstanding, so he is in meditation of Lord Ram. But in the future, when the 10th incarnation of Krishna appears, Sri Kalkiji, he will be the commander-in-chief of the army. So he has that service still outstanding. So he's there in the Himalayas. So Uddhava was actually advised to go to this place, Bhadrika Ashram, as a service. So Uddhava is actually a great personality. He was within the Vrishni dynasty, as we mentioned. You know, Uddhava was actually the cousin of Krishna. So Krishna's father's brother's son. You know, they actually said that Uddhava looked almost identical to Krishna. Same bodily features, same effulgence. He wore a yellow dhoti, he wore a lotus garland. So he was actually very, very beautiful, very, very intelligent. He's a disciple of Brihaspati, the guru of the demigods. So again, very blessed. And he was the dearmost friend of Krishna. So actually in Uddhava's life, Krishna asked him twice to do something for him. Now, when he asked him to go to Bhadrika Ashram because he couldn't go himself personally. But earlier on, Krishna had asked Uddhava to actually go to Vrindavan. When Krishna had left Vrindavan, or apparently left Vrindavan, to go to Mathura to defeat King Kamsa, the Brajvasis were all heartbroken. And they were in distress and constantly meditating on Krishna, constantly meeting up and discussing his pastimes, his form, his beauty. And Krishna could feel that there was this great deal of separation that the Brajvasis were feeling from him. So he thought, who should I send to go and speak to these Brajvasis? So he thought, who better than Uddhava? Because he's very intelligent and he wanted to give him this very special favor. So Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. When Uddhava arrived in Vrindavan, he first met with Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. He came in his chariot. Everyone was excited. They knew that Krishna had sent someone because of the way the chariot had arrived. When Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda saw Uddhava, they were very ecstatic. And they sat him down, welcomed him. Nanda Maharaj started to talk first. Yashoda Mata sat next to Nanda Maharaj, very quietly, grave, just patiently listening to what Uddhava had to say. So Nanda Maharaj was remembering Krishna first. He starts talking about Krishna, remembering all the pastimes Krishna had, you know. He starts to narrate all the stories, you know, when Krishna killed Bakasura, Aristasura, you know, Trinivarta, Denukasura. He starts to remember when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. And they start having tears of ecstasy flowing from their eyes. So Nanda Maharaj asks Uddhava, how is Krishna? When is he coming? You know? Now Uddhava, being a very intelligent person, has not comprehended Vraj Bhakti. He has devotion in his heart, but he hasn't understood the Vrajvasis. And Krishna wanted to give him that boon of understanding Vraj Bhakti. So when Uddhava starts to explain, he starts to say that Krishna and Balaram are well, they're happy. And he says that you might not know this, but Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and so is Balaram, you know. Everything manifests from Krishna. He starts to explain the various incarnations of Krishna. He said they will come soon to Vrindavan to satisfy you both, but you actually don't need to worry, because Krishna is everywhere. He's present in everything, you know. And he starts to give him, Nanda Maharaj, this philosophical point of view of Krishna. That actually Krishna is the super soul within your heart. He's already there, you know. Krishna has no enemies. He has no friends. He has no mother. He has no father, you know. He's not affected by material nature. So he's busy telling him all of these things. Krishna doesn't take birth in this world. He just appears. He's not under the spell of Maya. And he's nobody's son. Now imagine telling Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda that Krishna is nobody's son. He's here. You have nothing to worry about. They just couldn't comprehend what he was talking about, because they had experienced rasas like no other. If we think about the rasas, there's actually 5 types of rasas. Yeah? Shantaras. Rasa means relationship. So we can have 5 different types of relationship with Krishna. Shantaras means to see Krishna as a Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's how most people see him. God, Supreme Person. And that was the angle in which Uddhava was presenting the relationship to Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. Then you have Dasya Ras, the relationship of servitude. You have Sakya Ras, the relationship of friendship, like the Gopas had and Krishna's friends had. Then you have Vatsalya Ras, parental love, which Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj had, and the senior gopis. They used to treat Krishna as their son. And then you have Madhurya Ras, you know, conjugal lover. That's the ras that the gopis had. So Krishna actually wanted Uddhava to experience all 5 rasas rather than just the 1 ras, which he was trying to explain. Now imagine you've experienced all these 5 rasas and somebody is just telling you that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Very simply put, you know, you come to a festival here at Bhaktivedanta Manor. We had Nityananda Triodasi. They serve you rice, paneer sabji, you know, potato sabji, dokra, pakoras, sweets. This whole variety of prasadam in your feast. And somebody comes over and says to you, actually, we don't need any of this. We'll just have boiled vegetables and rice. And that is sufficient to sustain you, you know. You've experienced a wider array, and somebody's telling you, no, that's Maya Prabhu. We'll just give you, boiled vegetables and rice. How would you feel? So he couldn't comprehend what they were saying, and they couldn't comprehend what he was saying. So he had this whole discussion with them all through the night. The very next day, he wanted to also meet the gopis, because Krishna had said, meet my parents, meet my friends, and meet the gopis. The gopis had heard that someone special had come, so they were really excited. They finished all their chores in the morning and decided, okay, now is the time to go and meet Uddhava. So Uddhava came and they were mesmerized by him. He looked just like Krishna, you know. So they started to inquire, you know, where is Krishna? What's happening? They were crying incessantly. And Uddhava, again, pitches the same philosophy across to them. They were just crying, going mad. This is nonsense, you know. And they were expressing how they feel. And after that whole interaction with the gopis, Uddhava started to cry. Because just by the association of these advanced devotees, his heart had become purified. And he could understand how great these gopis were. So actually he wanted to get the dust of the gopis' lotus feet. But he couldn't ask, so he simply bowed down and took the dust that was around them. And put it on his forehead, you know. And through their association, the association of the Brajvasis, this Braj Bhakti awakened in Uddhava's heart. And it was so powerful, and this was a special favor that Krishna gave to Uddhava, to allow him to awaken this Braj Bhakti in his heart. Because if you think about it, Uddhava is actually a resident of Dwarka. But truly, internally, he is a Brajvasi at heart. And that is actually the mood we have to develop, is that regardless of where we live, you know, whether we're in London, whether we're in the Midlands, wherever we are, we might be residing there, but our heart should be of one that always resides in Vrindavan, you know. And we have to learn this, how to develop Braj Bhakti within our heart. So Uddhava is saying in this verse that Krishna is saying that he is the Lord and vanquisher of all distresses for those who surrender unto him. You know? Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jaya. Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jaya. Shri Shri Gornitai ki jaya. So Uddhava here is reiterating that, you know, the Lord is the vanquisher of distresses for those that surrender unto him. Another name for Krishna is Hari, one who takes away your distress. And this is something key that we see again and again, a theme that comes across the Bhagavad Gita. In the concluding verses of the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 18, Krishna says, you know, Sarva dharman parityaja mamikam sharanam raja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mukshasami masuchaha. That abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from sinful reactions. Do not fear. So Krishna is iterating. The whole point when Krishna and Arjuna had this discussion on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and the Bhagavad Gita was spoken was that Krishna took Arjuna through a whole range of yoga practices, a whole range of processes, in one sense, many types of different religions as well and practices. And towards the summarizing aspect of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I've told you all of this, now abandon it all, you know, and just surrender unto me. And he explains to Arjuna to just give this all up. And that's why Bhagavad Gita is so powerful, that the whole essence of Bhagavad Gita is, how do we surrender to Krishna, you know? Arjuna was thinking he was the doer when he was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and he couldn't kill all these people. Krishna was saying, I am the doer. If you surrender unto me, you will be glorious. So this is the whole point, is that we have to surrender to Krishna and he will vanquish all of our distress. Srila Prabhupada was traveling in Australia in 1975, in May of 1975, and he was having a Q&A session with the devotees. And one of the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada a question that he said, it's been lifetimes of us performing sinful activity, lifetime after lifetime. Is it going to take lifetime after lifetime of doing pious activities to first wipe out the sinful activity? Only then can we start our process of bhakti. What do you think Prabhupada said? He said, 1 minute. You can become pure devotee in 1 minute. Which meant, you know, absolutely immediately. He said, Prabhupada then explained, he said, you know, have you not read Bhagavad Gita? The whole essence of Bhagavad Gita is you simply surrender unto Krishna. Then you will become immediately freed from all reactions. Without reservation, without any politics, without any duplicity, fully surrender yourself and Krishna will save you. And Krishna is assuring us this. And Krishna, you know, we don't take anything without guarantee. Right? You go to a shop, you make sure you take the receipt, because if something is faulty, you can go back and say it's written here. So, and that's why Krishna has said this time and time again. And he summarizes and says this in the Bhagavad Gita so that we can take this as his guarantee. And more than a guarantee from Krishna is when his devotee guarantees it, Krishna most certainly does it, you know? Krishna says, you are not my devotee. If you're the devotee of my devotee, you're my devotee. So, you know, Uddhava here is saying that, Krishna is saying that if we surrender unto Krishna, he will vanquish our distress. Yeah? And that when we surrender unto Krishna, we will also be without distress and not with no fear. He said, do not fear. This is again a wonderful pastime of Srila Prabhupada. We see in Srila Prabhupada's life that he was consistent. It was not that at a certain stage he became self-realized and, you know, all these realizations came up. In 1942, in the midst of the Second World War, the Indian Army was fighting on behalf of the British Raj. And at this point in time, Calcutta was one of the central hubs of the British Army. And the Japanese, when they were bombing, they were flying over Calcutta and dropping bombs on different locations. And there was absolute chaos, right? So people were trying to vacate Calcutta and leave. Were vacating Calcutta and leave. And somebody came, and at that time, Srila Prabhupada was a householder living in Calcutta. And his friends knocked on the door and said, Prabhupada, we're, you know, Abhay Charan, Abhay Babu, we are vacating Calcutta. Join us. Come, let's go. It is not safe here. Prabhupada refused. He said, I'm not going anywhere. You know, I'm going to stay here and I'm going to chant. I'm going to read Bhagavatam. And I'm under the protection of Krishna. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear, you know, Rakho Krishna Marike, Maro Krishna Rakike. If Krishna wants to kill you, no one can save you. If Krishna wants to save you, no one can kill you. So Prabhupada had that firm conviction that it doesn't matter. I'm under the shelter of Krishna and I will be fine. You know? And that was the case, you know? He was absolutely fine and he did not vacate Calcutta. So the question then comes, how do we surrender? You know, Krishna is asking us to surrender. How to surrender? So Srila Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion gives us six processes to enhance our surrender. He recommends that we accept things that are favorable to our devotional service. So things that can help us in our bhakti, we should accept those. Things that are not favorable for our devotional service, we should reject those. You know, if we really think about our sadhana, at the very core of our practices are the yams and niyams that Srila Prabhupada gave us. The four regulative principles. When you take initiation, you vow two sets of things. You know, one, to chant 16 rounds every day, to read Srila Prabhupada's books. Yeah? So those are the things that will, you know, favorable. And then unfavorable, the four regulative principles. We take those four regulative principles as a vow. So at the very core of our practices, we already see that we have these that we should accept what is favorable and reject what is unfavorable. And we have to constantly be discriminating because Maya can come in tricky ways to say, you know what, do this, do that. We have to constantly be switched on to be conscious, to say, this is favorable for me, this is not favorable for me, you know? And then use our intelligence to see how we can become closer to Krishna. So accept what is favorable, reject things that are unfavorable. Believe firmly in the Lord's protection in all circumstances, that Krishna will protect you regardless of circumstances. Number four, to feel exclusively dependent on the mercy of the Lord. So we have to be exclusively dependent, knowing that, you know, Krishna is my supreme shelter and he will protect me. Have no interest separate to Krishna. So we know that he is my Lord and I don't need to wander here and there to find protection because Krishna will do that. And always feel oneself meek and humble. Trinada Pisunicha Na, you know, be meek and humble. And Mahaprabhu further emphasized this, that we have to be in a state of meek and humbleness. So Prabhupada explains that we should see ourselves as helpless. We should see Krishna as our only basis. And if we surrender to Krishna in this way, we will see that actually Krishna is our strength, not our weakness. When we think about surrender, we think about weakness, that we have, you know, waved the white flag, laid down our arms. No, Krishna is actually our strength. It's the opposite. That actually when you surrender to him, you glorify him. It's a position of power rather than weakness. Right? So, we have to accept what is favorable and reject what is unfavorable. In the scriptures, they explain that there are two types of spiritualists, a bhajananandi and a goshtianandi. Right? A bhajananandi is someone that focuses internally, does their sadhana, you know, reads, goes deep within, you know. You find a lot of the Babaji's in Braj that are bhajananandis. They focus very strictly in their spiritual practices. When you associate with them, you get inspired, but they do not necessarily go out of their way. Whereas Goshtianandis are those that do their bhajan. So they are actually bhajananandis, but their bhajan, you know, overflows so much out of their heart that they do not want to keep that internally only. They want to spread it, you know. Ghoshti actually is a Sanskrit word that means to assemble. So they love to assemble with others and spread whatever they have in their heart that's overflowing with others, you know. So Ghoshti Anandis, our movement is of Ghoshti Anandis. If we think back to Mahaprabhu, you know, he went all over India, all over the world, spreading Krishna consciousness. We think back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada. They're all Ghoshti Anandis, you know. All you wonderful Sankirtan devotees, you know, devotees that go out on Sankirtan to distribute books, you're all Ghoshti Anandis because you do your sadhana, you do your practices, but that's not enough for you. You want to go out there and spread Krishna consciousness. And as we spread Krishna consciousness, we know that Krishna is taking care of us at every step of the way. We see that again in Srila Prabhupada's life. You know, in 1965, 13th of August 1965, Srila Prabhupada embarked on a major journey. It was the day that he boarded the Jaladuta. You know, just reflecting on when Prabhupada boarded the Jaladuta, you know, he had what he had on his possession was 40 rupees, a box of dry cereal, a suitcase, an umbrella, and a box of books. You know, how many of us travel this way, right? When nowadays, when you book a flight, you make sure parking is sorted, or somebody's dropping you to the airport. You've checked in online, yeah? Some people do fast track through passport control, you know? When you land, either you have family waiting for you, or a taxi driver with a board, at least with your name on it, so you know, you've been welcomed. Srila Prabhupada had simply written a letter to Sally Agarwal and her husband to say, you know, I'm coming to America. When he's coming, who knows, you know? The Agarwals had invited so many spiritualists over the years, and nobody ever pitched up. So on the 13th of August, Prabhupada, with 40 rupees in his pocket, boarded the Jaladuta, you know, with what? Faith that Krishna will protect him, and no fear whatsoever. If you think about it, really think about it, the diary came out last year. We were so fortunate to see the Jaladuta diary. It was released here at the Bhaktivedanta Manor as well. So Srila Prabhupada boarded that ship out of sheer compassion for everyone. He didn't need to go anywhere. He was very comfortable in Radha Damodar Temple in Vrindavan. He was very comfortable. The Brajbasis respected him. Prabhupada was writing the Back to Godhead magazine. He was doing books. But he was unsatisfied because he had that instruction from a spiritual master to preach in the English language all over the world. And he knew that whatever the West does, they follow in India. And he needed to go. So his heart was overflowing. But it wasn't, he was actually in the most position of most strength because he had Krishna's undivided protection. He had the protection of the gurus and spiritual masters. When we go on Sankirtan, sometimes we are nervous. You know, people hear so many wonderful stories of Sankirtan. Devotees are nervous. But they know that actually they're simply an instrument in Krishna's hands to distribute the books. And it's not their strength upon which they're embarking on. It is a spiritual strength. So Srila Prabhupada had this in his heart that I am most unfortunate, unqualified and the most fallen, you know, meek and humble. Krishna, you are here to protect me. We hear, you know, we've heard so many times Prabhupada had two heart attacks along the way. And if he had the third, it could have been disastrous for him, you know. But Krishna protected him. He arrived in America, didn't know whether to go left or right. There was nobody waiting with a sign, you know. I mean, the place he was going to, they didn't even know he was coming. But look where we are now. Here at the Bhaktivedanta Manor, 51 years later, we have such a glorious temple. We have so many temples around the world. You know? Why? This is Srila Prabhupada's mercy, you know? Krishna here is asking Arjuna, is asking Uddhava to go to Badrika Ashram, okay? To associate with devotees and to surrender, you know? And Srila Prabhupada is so kind that he took Vrindavan with him. He took Badrika Ashram with him. He took Mayapur with him and he brought it to the West. You know, we can associate here. We're basically here having a Goshti, an assembly of devotees. It's Prabhupada's mercy. So we're fortunate to have all these wonderful temples, all these holy places we can visit. We're very fortunate to have retreats we can go to, all avenues to associate with. So fortunate to have these beautiful deities here with us. Fortunate to have this Bhagavatam class going on for 51 years now. You know? So all these things will assist us in surrendering to Krishna, to taking shelter of the devotees. And in that shelter of the devotees, we will avoid the distresses of material existence and the pain of separation from Krishna by talking about Krishna, his name, form, qualities and pastimes. So yeah, we are very, very fortunate by Srila Prabhupada's mercy that we have all these avenues to surrender. And Srimad Bhagavatam is full of such stories. The lives of the acharyas are full of such stories. And as we hear them, our conviction gets deeper, our surrender gets deeper. And hopefully one day, by Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda's mercy, we can also develop Vraj Bhav, you know, and Vraj Prem, and become pure devotees of Krishna. So thank you so much for listening so attentively and patiently. If you have any questions or comments, please. Hare Krishna, we've got two questions. Jai Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Thank you very much. Prabhuji, I'm trying to understand in the context of Srila Prabhupada,
yes,
protected directly by Krishna when he went. So in a couple of days we'll be celebrating the appearance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and he obviously sent his own disciples to the West. So in the context, how do we try to understand that, you know, the strong desire that Bhaktisiddhanta had, and then obviously Prabhupada had the full faith in Krishna, and Bhaktisiddhanta also had that same, obviously, faith. So how do we try and understand these two different kind of scenarios?
Very beautiful question, Prabhu. There's two parts to answering this question. The very first part is the non-envious nature of the Vaishnavas. Vaishnavas are non-envious. Those that have developed full faith in Krishna are non-envious. So when we serve Krishna, I may see you serving Krishna, Prabhu. In their hearts, they have ecstasy, saying, look at how beautifully he's serving Krishna. I wish one day I could develop a tinge of that service. Whereas those that are materially inflicted feel, oh, why is he doing it? Maybe I should be doing this service, right? So those the nature of a Vaishnava is non-enviousness. So when we think about Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta, the mission was to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sent disciples as well, right? When Srila Prabhupada came to spread Krishna consciousness, time and time again, you'll hear, I was hearing it very recently as well, Prabhupada was actually crying and saying that it is only by the blessings of my Guru Maharaj that I'm out here spreading. He never took any credit for spreading Krishna consciousness. He said, this is the mercy of my Guru that I'm able to offer something, right? So we can see it glorious as well that actually Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sent devotees, Prabhupada. So they had this opportunity. But this service was, Prabhupada said, this service was reserved for me to go and spread. So it is, we can see it in two ways, that actually they were non-envious. They did not worry who is doing the service. The idea was that this was spread. Krishna consciousness was firstly spread. But Prabhupada then also then reminds us that actually this is the mercy of my Guru Maharaj. You know? So we can then see that actually how powerful Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was, that he used Srila Prabhupada as an instrument to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. So when we see beautiful festivals like we will have day after tomorrow, we can glorify Srila Bhaktisiddhanta because he inspired Srila Prabhupada, and through his mercy, you know, none of us have any strength on our own, as I mentioned before. It is the parampara that inspires us. So Prabhupada took the parampara with him to the West. So we can be appreciative of those devotees that came in the past, that went out. I saw somebody posted recently, two disciples, Western disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta, Saraswati Thakur. I saw that on Facebook. Very early disciples. And it's glorious. When we see Vaishnavas, we should feel glorious. We should feel happy. That is the real mood of Vaishnavas. So we can take, when we hear day after tomorrow, when we celebrate Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's appearance day, we can see that Srila Prabhupada carried the the mood of Bhaktisiddhanta, the mercy of Bhaktisiddhanta. And as Vaishnavas, glorify Bhaktisiddhanta for that. Glorify the Vaishnavas that have come in the past, and glorify Srila Prabhupada that have come in the past. I hope that, does that answer your question, Prabhu? Thank you. Yes, Prabhuji.
Thank you, Prabhu. This, the difference between a bhajananandi and a goshtananandi, I understand, but then at the same time, you said the goshtananandi is one who has, due to their bhajan, they're distributing the overflow.
Yes.
And then you put Sankirtan devotees in that category. And personally, I'm trying to understand, because it feels like, for me, I go in Sankirtan sometimes, and it's not that I'm distributing the overflow, but to just remain back and do bhajan is too difficult.
Yeah.
But actually, by engaging in
devotional service,
you get mercy, you get the ability to actually also chant and also. So is this still goshtananandi? It's not that so much ecstasy is coming from chanting, you want to share it with people. It's simply.
It's a very good question. Option, you know? So in spiritual life, 1 + 1 does not equal 2, right? Whenever we think of something, we think from a logical perspective. Like, you know, your question very nicely says that, you know, if my heart is not overflowing, I'm not giving the overflow, you know. But I can't also sit back. So in spiritual life, 1 + 1 does not add 2. There's an element of Krishna's mercy which is unlimited. Now, there's going to be different stages in your devotional life or in our devotional life. And what we'll find is that there isn't an overflow, but there is a desire for there one day to be an overflow, right? But what happens when we go out and give at least what we have, whatever little that is, you know, sometimes we hear something, we want to share that. It is not that we have then suddenly lost what we had. When you think about overflow, you're thinking, if I'm giving something, it is gone, right? But actually, Krishna reciprocates in an amazing way, where whatever you give could magnify 10,000-fold. And there's actually a very beautiful pastime, if I can very quickly share, and this might help answer your question. It also happened in this region of Bhadrika Ashram, because these paths lead to the upper planetary systems. When the pastimes were coming to a close, Yudhishthira Maharaj was walking up to this path to leave this material world behind. And whilst he was walking, a little dog started to follow him. Okay? So Yudhishthira Maharaj is walking on this path, and this dog starts to follow him. And Yudhishthira Maharaj gets to the gate. And the person at the gateway says to Yudhishthira Maharaj, "You can come in, but the dog cannot. Because you have enough spiritual credit to go, but the dog does not." Now, Yudhishthira Maharaj's heart was full of compassion. He was the ideal king, you know, ideal person. So he turned back to the gatekeeper and he said, "So what we will do instead is that I will give all my spiritual credit to the dog, let the dog go through, and I will remain behind." But just by desiring that, so the dog went through, and then Yudhishthira Maharaj started to turn around. Then the gatekeeper said, "Actually, you can come in." He said, "Well, I just gave my spiritual credit." He goes, "No, by you giving your spiritual credit, your credit expanded 1,000-fold. Yeah? So this is the mercy of the devotees, is that you may feel that we are not competent enough. We do not have that overflow. And that is, in one nature, our humbleness, because one day if we say, "My heart is overflowing, I'm going to go out and give," you don't find Vaishnavas that say, "Oh, my heart is overflowing, here you go, Prabhu, have my association." No, they they forever remain humble and meek, you know. So the point is that whatever we give, as we give that out, Krishna reciprocates in so many ways. Mahaprabhu reciprocates in so many ways. So that even if we have little bit, if we give that, we will find that that starts to expand. Our bhajan starts to expand. Your service starts to expand. And you will find that, you know, you're able. Sometimes you look at devotees, like, if you look at some of our spiritual teachers within our movement, I know I'm almost out of time. A simple example, His Holiness Jayapataka Swami Maharaj, his health is not good. We can see that his body has pretty much given up on Maharaj. But if you see the stats of how many flights he's taking, how many meetings he has in a day, how many classes he's giving, an able-bodied person will think, that's impossible, I can't do that. How is Maharaj doing that, you know? That's because there's such an overflow, and by giving, that has expanded over time. So as we give whatever little we have, we will find that that starts to expand. Our capacity to serve expands. Our desire to serve expands. And then you'll see that that starts to magnify. Each one of us has 24 hours in a day. Krishna has given us the same amount of time. What we do with it then depends on us, you know? So if we do that, we give that little, we'll see that overflow will naturally start to progress. And we'll want to give more. We'll want to do more Sankirtan, associate more. And naturally you'll find that that flow is ever expanding. And it's not that one add one, if I give something, I lose that. No, Krishna expands that. Hope that answers your question, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Any other questions? Yes, Mataji?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
What does the gradual process of surrendering to Krishna feel like? And on an emotional level, what should we let go of and what enchants us? What do you feel in your personal experience? And what are the hardest things to do to let go of?
Could you repeat the first part? Sorry, I missed
okay.
a few words on that.
What does the gradual process of surrendering to Krishna feel like?
Okay. So what does the gradual process of surrendering to Krishna feel like? And the second part of your question was?
Is on an emotional level, what should we let go of and what enchants us? What do you feel in your personal experience?
Thank you. That's a very deep question. It could take a whole class to answer. So I will just mention a couple of points on here. What does the process for surrender feel like?
Yeah.
What you will find yourself is, as you're surrendering, you see, surrender is an active process. We spoke about associating, performing devotional service. And as we perform more and more devotional service, and we develop, we'll start to develop love within our heart. And what you will find that as you're rendering devotional service, you're feeling happy, excited. There's these emotions that start to come up, the desire to want to do more, you know. So as we do these, we'll find that actually we have that need to want to do more service. And a nice way to see that need is if you pull away from the service, you feel like I'm missing that service. There's that lacking in my heart. That shows that attachment to the service, right? So as we engage more and more in devotional service, we'll feel that actually I want to serve more. You'd want to think, one thing surrender also looks like is you'll have more compassion in your heart. You know, you have this, how do I give it to others so that other people can feel what I'm feeling. All right? This is just a perspective. There's obviously different dimensions to it. And the second part of your question was, in my personal experience... What was the hardest to let go? Was that your question? The hardest thing to always let go is your false ego, you know, that I am I and my and me, you know, I am somebody, I'm somebody important, you know, because devotional service can be very humbling, you know. Some of you live in the ashram, you know, associating with different devotees, you know, sometimes we hear from Bhagavatam and we think, wow, association is so amazing, you know. But then someone steps on your toes, you have to wait, the hot water is finished, you're waiting in the line for a shower. You know, it can be purifying as well. So the false ego is something that is always the hardest to let go, you know. We see someone serving so nicely, we have this desire, how can I serve like them, you know. Devotees come day in, day out and do that service. We sometimes get tired or exhausted or unable to, and we think, how are they doing it? You know, I wish I had that. It's that false ego. And then to realize that actually, wait, they're empowered by Krishna. If I associate with them, I could get that tinge of energy, that blessing, so that I too may be empowered. It's that false ego that is always the hardest. But as we stick with advanced devotees, we see their mood, of service. You know, we see spiritual masters, they come, they embrace each other. We can see the interactions, and it's always very pleasing. So if we start to associate with devotees, advanced devotees, see their behavior, how we should behave, the sadachar, we will start to leave those designations behind. And eventually, we want to get to the stage that I am simply your servant, engage me how you like. You know? We see that in the last verse of the Shishashtakam. You know, Mahaprabhu was saying, embrace me as tight as you want, keep me in separation, but keep me in your service. So if we can do that, we'll find that, you know, it's less about me, more about how I can be an instrument in the service of the Lord. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Grantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.